the polarization of are you in or are you out of religion was off-putting to me. And yet I feel increasingly this confidence and the sense of belonging, like there is something emerging and it's real and valid and heartfelt. I've felt a lot of hope that there is home.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn. This week on In Good Faith, we're tying in with families and kids and how you live spiritually as a family and what do you pass on, especially if you maybe believe different things. I'm in studio with senior producer Heather Bigley.
Hello.
Also, our producer Leah King.
Hi, Steve.
So, John Ogden comes to us with really a unique vision of how parents can teach kids, but also how to help the parents in the parents' own confusion, I think, which parents, we must admit, some of us have been confused about how to do this.
Yeah, John Ogden, he's been a teacher, curriculum creator, content director, and a writer. And now he has Uplift Kids, which is seeking to create a curriculum for families from the world's wisdom literature. And so he's come today to talk to us about spiritual education, but he has this research that he's done, and he has this this whole company that he's created to help families talk about spiritual values with their children.
So we started right there with what is the Uplift Kids curriculum?
It's currently a lesson library and curriculum for families to explore values together. So whether it be kindness, compassion, humility, grit, honesty, or emotional intelligence, how to name emotions, how to regulate emotions, and also wisdom practices, mindfulness, meditation, prayer, etc. So we take this expansive approach to spirituality.
So people from different denominations or no denomination
exactly.
can come to it and say, I value these spiritual mm-hmm. and character qualities. Here's a cool way to interact with my kids and
yep.
teach them that.
That's right.
Okay, here's my favorite thing on your website. This actually, I don't know why, this makes me emotional a little bit. You have a section called Our Approach, and you list seven different things. And the very first thing is, we help parents and children find their inner compass. Call it conscience, spirit, source, the true self, God, or the divine. We hold that spiritual development is a crucial part of well-being. That's mm-hmm. your North Star, you say.
Yeah.
So that's not teaching kids, here's the list of things to do and here's the list of things to never do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask me questions because I don't know why, but this is how it is. Talk to me about parents and children finding and having their inner compass. That seems to me like that, because it's a navigation term, is helpful in navigating these vagaries of life and these openings of our intellectual quests or spiritual longings that may come upon us and have us thinking, wait, is this the right thing to do? Is this the wrong thing to do?
That term came to us largely through the work of Lisa Miller, who's a professor of psychology at Columbia University, and she studies spirituality and neuroscience. And in her book, The Spiritual Child, she talks about this metaphor of the compass. And the reason I find it so powerful is that at a certain point, every parent is going to have to say goodbye to their kid.
Mm.
The kid leaves home, goes to school, goes to college, goes to work at a job. And at that point, the parent has much less say in what happens in the child's life. And yet, if the kid can learn that there's an inner compass beneath all of the frenetic pace of life,
mm.
they can find that there is direction, there's guidance, wherever they are. So if they hit a depressive episode or an episode of anxiety, which is very common, they can remember to align themselves with the inner compass or an inner voice
yeah.
or divine love. And that can serve them throughout their entire life. As a parent, you just cannot anticipate all the problems that your child might face. But if you can guide them to an inner compass and help them align with an inner compass, they're going to have a foundation regardless of where they end up.
I think our world today, by design or not, distracts us from that. Is that part of the curriculum, making time for this?
Yeah, it is. And it's tricky because we have a digital curriculum. And so there's a paradox.
You have to go online. Uh-huh. Yeah, there exactly. is an app.
Uh-huh. And anybody listening to this podcast is also using digital technology.
Yep.
And so...
And we're grateful.
Yes. Uh-huh. And so it's about integrating life with... digital life with the natural world. And to recognize that as human beings, we are nature.
Mm-hmm.
We're not machines.
Oh, I love you that know, distinction.
With a machine, there's only one way to fix it. You can do something. You have to take the car into the repair shop. You have to take your bike into the bike shop, your phone into the repair store. But with human beings and with nature, there are two options to heal. One is to do something and one is to do nothing. And doing nothing is this draw towards silence.
Mm-hmm.
And to allow the stillness to do the healing. And so that's one of the lessons that we hope to teach. Just this idea that there's healing in this stillness. There is so much power in observing the natural world, to not be so busy that we lose sight of the natural world. And so we hope that our technology, you know, our digital lesson library, digital curriculum, points kids to being in the natural world. We hope that people see technology as a tool and not as something that rules their lives.
Mm. I see a board of advisors that include meditation experts and other areas as
That's
well.
Right. Yep.
So give me an example. If a parent says, I go to upliftkids.org and I sign up, what am I signing up for and how does that work with my family?
By the end of this year, we will have 2 years worth of lessons. And the lessons are about the foundations. They're related to values, they're related to wisdom practices, and they're related to lessons about religions around the world. So an introduction to wisdom around the world. And you can sit down for 20 minutes, you know, once a week if you want as a family and explore these concepts. We also have a daily uplift, which is, you know, if you're just kind of at breakfast, you can pull it up on your phone, do the daily uplift, and get exposure to these different practices in bite-sized form.
So talk to me about responses. What is happening with families who are doing this?
It's been really good to see that one of our intentions has come to fruition, which is that we have hoped that this would be useful for families who say that they're part of a religion, for mixed faith marriages, and for families who have said that they have left religion.
Mm.
We've really hoped to bridge and transcend the divide between are you in or are you out of religion?
Yeah.
Because that conversation can feel really deflating. It can turn antagonistic very quickly, and it often turns into something that doesn't feel terribly fruitful. It's not really focused on truth, beauty, and goodness. It can be focused on like, I'm right or you're wrong.
Yeah.
And so in a mixed faith marriage, for example, mm-hmm. you know, one partner might say, I've left religion. I don't want anything to do with it. And one partner might say, yeah, I'm still interested in being part of religion. And that can lead to a lot of internal conflict in the family. And so what we've hoped to do is create this curriculum in such a way that somebody who's left can say, I'm interested in exploring kindness in a way that is informed by the latest neuroscience. And the person who's in religion could say, I'm interested in exploring kindness. And they can put on a united front and find common ground. And so we hear a lot from families who are saying, you know, I'm in a mixed faith marriage. This is the first time that we've been able to have a conversation that wasn't contentious
yeah.
about these topics.
And it's not just the two members of that relationship, but then that helps them not be at odds about what to pass on to the kids.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
So we were at a conference, the table next to us was you, uh-huh. and I saw this mock-up of a book that I thought, I want that book. And you brought me the mock-up today. Tell me the title and what it's trying to do.
It's called The Book of Wisdom, and it's something that we've been polishing and working on for a long time. And it has the best of the wisdom traditions. So the best of Stoicism, the best of Taoism, Christianity, Hinduism, etc. And we tell stories from these traditions mm-hmm. for younger kids. And we also have wisdom passages for older kids and teens. And I've wanted that for my own kids because I've wanted them to see that there is wisdom around the world. And there's something so powerful about celebrating wisdom around the world, as you do on this podcast, because it allows one to also appreciate the wisdom of their own tradition. You know, that if you feel like you're in a faith crisis, there can be a tendency to say, oh, I should reject it. I should reject everything that came before. But once you see that there is wisdom around the world, you can reach the state of having more calm about the wisdom within your own tradition as well. And so you can take all of that together. It allows you to re-embrace your lineage, which is a big focus of Uplift.
Well, it gives me the idea of a garden. I am alive because I've sprouted in various ways. And as tall as I may grow, I'm picturing a sunflower, and I'm overlooking great things about these other gardens and in touch with them. But my roots are connected to something.
One of my favorite stories from any tradition comes at the very end of the Mahabharata, which is in Hinduism. Mm-hmm. It tells the story of a king and his family, and they've reached the end of life. And they go on this metaphorical journey to death. And on the way, a dog follows them. One by one, the family members die on the journey. And at the very end of the journey, you know, this king has traveled very far, climbed this mountain, and he finds a guide who's going to take him to heaven. And the king says, I'm not going to go unless you allow me to bring this dog along. And the guide says, no, you can't bring the dog along. And he says, well, the dog has been loyal to me the entire journey. I'm not going to leave the dog here to possibly die. He has to come with me. And he's so fervent about it that the guide says, okay, I'll let him come. So the king gets to heaven and he looks around and doesn't see his family. In fact, he sees his enemies from the wars they've been fighting all throughout the Mahabharata. The king says, well, where's my family? And the guide says, I'll take you to them. And he takes the king to the underworld. They're languishing in the underworld in the darkness, and there's foul stench. They're having a miserable time. And the king says, I want to be with my family. And the guide says, the only way that you can be with your family is if you stay here. And the king says, okay, I'm going to stay here. And the guide then says, okay, you passed the second test. I can sense the love that you have. Mm-hmm. You can ascend to paradise with your family. It's a profound story. This idea that you'll be willing to stick with your family no matter what, have this loyalty. I just find it very moving, very timeless.
What would you then lead to in a discussion?
From there?
Uh-huh.
Well, it's interesting. In childhood education, there's a debate about this. And some people, I think, who are quite informed about this, say that you actually don't want to open up the discussion unless the kids are interested. So this is kind of the opposite of maybe the way I was raised. I always thought that, okay, if you have a story, you should have a discussion.
Uh-huh.
But there are people in the psychological research who say, just follow your kid's lead. And so we do have discussion prompts in our wisdom library. What does it mean to have love in our family? How much do we love each other? Do you feel like you would make this choice? Those kind of things. But they're all optional. You can just let the story speak for itself.
This king and his family member dies. That's really serious. Is that too much for kids?
I think no. And increasingly, the more I look at the literature around psychology, the more I see the value in telling scary stories or even slightly disturbing stories. Obviously, there's a line for kids. But I think that oftentimes we can be a little too careful with our stories.
Because grandma and grandpa are going to die at some
right.
point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we could maybe give them a framework.
Mm-hmm. My kids have been watching the original Mickey Mouse cartoons on Disney Plus. I had no idea that Mickey Mouse was like mischievous. I didn't know that. He was always this bland, vapid, high-pitched character. And watching the originals, I'm like, oh, there's something very intriguing and funny about Mickey Mouse.
Interesting.
And then he became safe as Disney became an institution.
Mm.
It was the same fear of like, oh, we can't have this bad influence on kids. But there's something alluring about the mischief of Mickey Mouse. You see it in Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
Bluey is a very popular kids TV show.
I have seen my share of Bluey even this week with one of my granddaughters.
It's wonderful. Where the Wild Things Are. Kids love a bit of chaos in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so
Well, is it their chance to say, well, I don't think I could do that, but I want to hear what happens to people who do.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a safe way to explore.
That's the whole point of theater and movies. And
so there needs to be a bit of wildness to really reach the heart.
Fill us in on some of these resources. You've got a blog. I'm reading The Beginner's Guide to Parenting After a Faith Shift, 21 Examples of Spiritual Experiences. I mean, you're not shying away. This is a spiritual pursuit. It's not purely psychological.
Our whole goal is spirituality. We're going to own that. And it's been interesting to see, you know, somebody from the Board of Education here in Utah reached out and said, we're seeing the neuroscience on spirituality, and we're interested in leaning into that direction. It was a total surprise to me. I thought, oh, there's no way that we would ever be in schools because we're putting our flag in the ground on spirituality.
Right.
But the emerging science is catching up and showing, no, actually, spirituality is really healthy and really important. Kids are facing a crisis of meaning. They're feeling purposeless. They're having anxiety and depression.
Yes.
And spirituality is a huge component that's been overlooked when it comes to helping kids navigate those difficult problems.
And you're not dictating any particular path of spirituality to people, just that it is a part of our human existence.
Yeah, we're pulling from so many different perspectives, and we're saying, hey, celebrate whatever resonates with you. You know, Uplift isn't saying, here's the path. It's saying, listen in to what speaks to your heart and trust it. And feel confident to go in that direction.
You're listening to In Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Hi, I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of In Good Faith. In our BYU Radio family of podcasts, I've got to tell you about an award-winning podcast called Constant Wonder. Are you ready to immerse yourself in the awe-inspiring world of nature? That's what Constant Wonder does. Host Marcus Smith brings us on trips and conversations with people whose lives have been touched by the beauty of the earth and exploring its mysteries. If you crave some adventure and you want to travel the earth, but it's hard to fit into your schedule, do what I do and listen to Constant Wonder, riveting conversation with individuals whose lives have been impacted and changed by their explorations of the Earth's beauty and its mysteries. Constant Wonder, wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to In Good Faith. We're chatting with John Ogden, founder of Uplift Kids, a values curriculum for families. I wanted to ask about the family he grew up in, and they were members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah, I was raised LDS, and I would say from a pretty early age, I was aware of spirituality beyond that single tradition. I think looking back, I was deeply influenced by Paul Simon, the songwriter.
Interesting.
And so I have just noticed over the years how much his songwriting is about spirituality, these questions of God, and an expansive approach to spirituality. And I think it really seeped into my being. You know, I was listening to Paul Simon in grade school, and he's been my favorite songwriter ever since. And as I grew older, I found other things like Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, the Bhagavad Gita, and I started to see that there was so much wisdom everywhere, and just really appreciate this expansive approach to spirituality and the sense of camaraderie, my fellow brothers and sisters around the world, seeking for something ultimate, seeking for something that is beyond comprehension, so beautiful and so inspiring, and just feeling this deep sense of connection with those people around the world.
You know, it's really interesting that you came to that all on your own, it seems like.
Yeah, and it was part of my family culture. You know, we were reading beyond the standard works and stuff like that. And so, Yes, yes and no.
So there are some people who feel like, well, if I reach anywhere outside of this box, I have to reject what's in the box.
Exactly, yeah.
And you seem instead to have said, I don't have to reject what I have, what I believe, but mm-hmm. I can be open to what God is doing all around the world through people.
I'm a big fan of this idea that you can seek for whatever is true, beautiful, or good, wherever you find it.
Well, I appreciate you living that out in your life. Did that create any problems for you, either conflicts, internal or external?
I've wrestled with faith for a long time. You know, I was an LDS missionary from ages 19 to 21, and I was serving in California, and just many people who had different views than I did at the time. And encountering those views stretched my faith in big ways. And it was difficult. You know, there was a lot of existential turmoil, and there still is, but it is a good kind of stretch, ultimately.
I wonder if some people, when the faith they've been raised in, when they feel stretched like that, maybe panic, like, oh no, I'm losing my faith, but I wonder if they could think of it as an expansion, if they could do that without fear and panic. Mm-hmm.
I definitely had fear and panic. So
you're
I'll
not
say that.
Alone.
I'm not alone. Okay, good. So I'll say that I definitely had fear and panic. And yet I agree with what you're saying. There is comfort if you can hold this idea that it is a stretch and it's an expansion. And that can be very healthy. Growing up does mean seeing the world differently than you saw it as a child.
Well,
and that's difficult.
Paul talks about that when I was a child.
Exactly.
I thought as a child.
Yeah, and so that growth can be difficult. You know, it's like when a seed breaks open into a sprout, I don't know how that feels for the seed, but I could guess that it would feel a bit painful.
Oh,
you know?
No.
Exactly, it's gone. And yet that growth is so helpful and so healing ultimately because you recognize that it's all part of something bigger than the self.
I think I could take that line and maybe summarize what I know about you, that you were trying to be part of something bigger than yourself. That's why you're doing this, uplift kids.
Mm-hmm.
But did parenthood affect your faith?
The question of how do I raise my kids given that I have had this stretch or this expansion? I can't raise them the exact same way that I was raised, but I still love so much about the way I was raised. And so it just opened a bunch of questions that were very pressing for me. It was a hunger and perhaps an obsession, I don't know. But it was definitely like this urgency to figure out, okay, how do I find a foundation when I feel like, do I have a foundation? You know, how am I supposed to raise a kid in this state of being? And it's been very fortunate and healing to be able to say, yeah, I have a foundation.
Can you put your finger on why you believe in God, the divine, something you can't see, but that you have faith in? That's a hard question to ask people.
It's a great question. It is perhaps represented in the metaphor of taste.
Mm-hmm.
It's something at a subtle level that I can't quite define perfectly, but I can sense and feel in certain circumstances, in certain settings, that I know is valid, that I know is real. And I've constantly been tracing that, you know, sensing into that. Is this a setting where I feel that sense of love or that sense of hope or not? And just really trying to follow that sense through my life and realizing that there is a constant of love and hope beneath the veneer and the busyness of life. And so I've come to trust that more and more. Uh-huh. Even though it isn't always aligned with rationality, you know, my thoughts might be here or there, but I can trust this thing that's underneath.
You've had enough life experience with that.
Absolutely. That's led to fruit.
I want to apply that to me. Mm. What would it take for me to not just be, I don't know, to be living like that and open to growth and not panic when my seed case is broken and I'm starting to sprout in some new interest or area.
Mm-hmm. It's such a powerful pattern to recognize, oh, this is growth. I'm going to follow this. I'm going to let it happen. Uplift started in part because of loneliness, a loneliness that I feel as I've reached this frontier that feels daunting when it comes to expansive spirituality. It's like, how do I fit in? How do I find belonging when I'm on this frontier? We created the curriculum to speak to a worldview, but our ultimate aim is to find community, to find other people who are interested in this, and to partner with other organizations. We don't think Uplift is the way of the future. You know, it's we're one player, and we're so thankful for podcasts like this one and others that are getting into expansive spirituality. Because for a stretch, I really felt like there is no home for me. I don't really fit in anywhere. The polarization of, are you in or are you out of religion, was off-putting to me. And yet, I feel increasingly this confidence and this sense of belonging, like there is something emerging, and it's real and valid and heartfelt. And so we're finding other parents who are interested in this, finding other organizations who are interested in this, meaning expansive spirituality. I've felt a lot of hope that there is home.
That was Steve talking to John Ogden, who founded Uplift Kids. And as he was describing the discussion prompts in their book, I was reminded of something my family did at the dinner table growing up. It was this game called Family Talk, and my family listening is going to be so surprised that I'm even speaking about this, because I did not like when my dad would get up from the table and come back with those yellow index cards. But looking back, I think it was something that really helped me connect with my parents and my siblings. The cards had questions that ranged from, what's your favorite candy, to what's something that you admire about another person, or what's something that's difficult about being a kid. And those kind of conversations didn't come up naturally all of the time, so I think having those discussion prompts was really helpful for us. I think that Uplift Kids is doing something similar and having conversations with children that maybe don't come up all the time, or conversations they don't know how to have.
In an ideal world, I think we would say, oh, of course we talk with each other. We know each other so well. But it's really easy not to go to those places. So I'm with you. I think this is a great opportunity.
One of the things I love is John saying, I didn't want to raise my kids exactly how I was raised, but I also appreciated some of the things that my family had done for me. And I love that. I love this idea of families taking time every week, even if the kids hate it, to spend a little time with each other, talk about important things, have some Jell-O if that's how your family does things. You know, in my own family, I had kind of a topsy-turvy, chaotic childhood, but I do remember very fondly the times when my family made efforts to gather together and we read Bible stories. That's what we did when I was a very young child. And I can remember acting out the story of Ruth and Naomi when I was very, very small. I might have been 4 years old. And that's a happy memory for me. Again, us doing that, us gathering together and having these family nights where we talked about what was important and how do we act the way our beliefs would have us act. That happened very rarely, but when I look back, they are, for me, memories of peace and stability and reassurance, right? That I was loved and that my parents made this effort on our family's behalf.
And two things that have really stuck with me. One was this idea that you will help a child establish their inner compass rather than listen to me, obey whatever, but to know how it feels and what feels like the right thing that really does tie in with what you personally believe. And then I was really touched when he talked about how he came to all of this through the idea of loneliness. That as he noticed some of his thinking was different or more expansive than others he was with, he thought, where do I fit in? Can I even belong here? And the way he talks about building community by figuring out how to belong and how to find a home and with your beliefs.
Yeah, and he talks a little bit about this crisis that we're seeing in young people.
A crisis of meaning, yeah.
Yeah, a crisis of meaning. And I think if you're paying attention, you've heard a lot of data recently about teenage suicide, anxiety, depression, and how those have risen, especially since the COVID crisis. But there's also a lot of data that says children that are being raised in religious homes do not suffer to the same extent as children who are not. And that gives me hope. And I love that John is offering, you know, along with many other solutions, a way to provide some spiritual thought and meaning.
Many thanks to John Ogden for speaking with us. Find out more at upliftkids.org. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley and me, Stephen Cap Perry. Our production team also includes Leah King, Ashton Rowan, Katarina Martinich, and Josh Orton. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen and Daniel Phillips. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. We'd love you to support In Good Faith and spread the word by leaving a comment or a review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter at In Good Faith Pod. Instagram and Facebook are In Good Faith Podcast. YouTube is youtube.com/@in-good-faith. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon right here in Good Faith.